Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we dive into the sustainability transitions that are reshaping our world. If you're curious about where the planet and its inhabitants are headed, you're in the right place. In each episode, we'll chat with experts from Triodosbank whose work relates to these changes, tackling topics like the energy transition, circular economy, and what sustainable finance really means. Our goal? To bring you the latest insights on what it takes to create a more balanced and just world. But we don't just want you to listen. We want you to be part of the conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts, ask questions, or leave us a voice message. Welcome to Money for Change. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to the Money for Change podcast, a weekly podcast made by the Impact and Economics team from Triodosbank that is busy figuring out how money can change society towards one that is more sustainable and inclusive. So, you've probably heard this before, huh? Money can change the world, but what has really changed? Well, this podcast is not about what has or has not changed, but what we hope and hopefully you hope will change. This podcast will be about transitions, transformations, economics, sustainability, finance, and any other topic brought forth by you, our listeners. Every episode, Hans Stegeman, Triodosbank's chief economist, will join us in a conversation together with a co-host and an expert on the particular topic. Everyone ready? Let's go. Hey, Hans. Hey. Awesome that you can join us. Can you tell us a little bit about what you expect from this podcast?
Oh, I expect so much from this podcast. I think you already explained the high over context, but we want to share our insights. So we are a bunch of researchers working here, impact managers, advocacy managers, insight challenges and questions we have on the road to the transformation towards a just and sustainable future. We will explore some examples on how that works, change makers that are contributing to these large transformations. And in the end, it's also about changing mindsets, but also the societal, technological, and cultural changes that will be needed to achieve a sustainability transformation. So, as you hear, I really want a lot. And we hope that sharing and discussing new and different ideas also contributes to a faster transition.
All right. To be honest, that might sound a little bit theoretical. Can you tell us about some of the different transformations or transitions that you mean?
Yeah, introducing this with this sounded theoretical. Also, a discussion about transitions and transformations is very theoretical. And I'm not going to do that here, but it will follow in the coming episodes. There's a whole lot of literature on the difference between a transition, which is sometimes one sector, like the energy transition or circular economy, the resource transition, and what we call a transformation and transformative impact, how you can change a more radical change in society. And I think, and that's what Triodosbank always has done, is that we want to have a more radical change, because that will also become very obvious in this podcast. It's not going that well in all respects. So we need more and more fundamental change. And for me, that's what transformation is about.
All right, great. Thanks. I hope the listeners also feel that way if you've made it to our podcast. Just a bit of an outline, the structure of every episode will be the same. So we'll start with a topic, with a guest. This week's topic, the very first topic, is biodiversity and the COP16. And then after we cover a key question, we'll go into some economic and sustainability news. Hans will give us either a hopeful or a dreadful news item. So definitely stay tuned for that. Also, a big sharing is everyone here in the studio is allowed to ask questions. We also want the listeners to engage with us as well. More details we'll have for you how to do that near the end of the episode. But let's get started for the topic of biodiversity. I have a sound fragment that you might want to listen to, because biodiversity loss is best listened to, the difference in the rainforest in Costa Rica before and then after deforestation. So you definitely hear the loss of wildlife, especially. A very biodiverse area is very noisy. And unfortunately, biodiversity is declining at an unprecedented rate. It's driven by different factors like habitat loss, climate change, pollution, and especially over-exploitation. The COP16 is a meeting that has happened in the last 2 weeks, and it focuses on biodiversity, trying to address these critical issues and trying to figure out strategies to halt this biodiversity loss and promoting sustainable conservation efforts. That is a very general description. I think our guest here, Piotr Chalama, is very much able to explain this way better. Piotr is a sustainability researcher at Triodosbank. His research focuses on topics like biodiversity loss, but also potential solutions like nature-based solutions, the integration of nature into agriculture. Piotr, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Honored to be the first ever guest on this podcast.
Yeah. Welcome.
We expect so much from you.
So much. Yeah. Yeah. I hope I can live up to all the cool expectations.
Awesome. The key question is, will COP16 safeguard biodiversity?
It's an interesting question, Emma. And I think for our listeners, it's maybe good to kind of zoom out a bit and tell what COP16 actually is. So COP stands for Conference of the Parties. And number 16 means it's the 16th time that we organize it. Well, the world organizes it. Yeah.
Can I ask just one question in between? Because there's also a COP25.
Yeah.
And what's the difference there? 29.
Yeah. That's the climate COP, right? So I think many people have heard of the Paris Agreement, which is the big agreement that came in 2015 for the COP on climate change. Mm-hmm. That's the annual, so every year it's organized, meeting of the UNFCCC, United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And that one is held every year. And then you have the COP for the Global Convention on Biological Diversity, the CBD, and that's held every 2 years.
Okay.
And they were held both at the same time, for the first time in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. So this is why we're kind of halfway the point of the climate COP, so to say.
And yeah, what was discussed this year? What were the outcomes? Was it a successful COP, would you say?
Yeah, that's a really big question. It ended yesterday, so it's a bit early to really say what kind of success it was. 2 years ago, there was maybe kind of the Paris Agreements of Biodiversity in the Kunming Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework.
Yeah.
So negotiated in two cities, Kunming in southern China and then Montreal. And there, the world really came together and set 23 global biodiversity targets related to a whole bunch of different topics. The headline is that we should reverse nature loss by 2030. And we want to do that by, for instance, conserving 30% of lands and oceans for biodiversity, reverse nature degradation, so restore another 30% of those lands, and also attract an additional $200 billion per year in funding for biodiversity loss. Or against biodiversity loss, I must say.
That kind of funding would be going to solutions or to activities such as?
Yeah, so I think you can think like things like sustainable forestry, like sustainable agriculture, maybe coastal regeneration. But actually how that money gets spent is actually one of the key debates at the COP. So there was a lot of talk that next year there was actually an interim target for the financing, so that the Global North countries had to finance at least $20 billion flowing to Global South countries by next year. So there was an additional pledge that now an extra $136 million will be flowing into the biodiversity fund. So that's nowhere near the money that was actually set out in the fund.
So in that regard, it is a little bit of a failure, at least in what they had hoped for originally.
I would say so. So the COP was really all about the money. So we need the funding to make the targets. I'm personally, mainly disappointed actually that it was all about the money. So there's also really other important targets in the Global Biodiversity Framework, like Target 5, reduce invasive species threats by 50% by 2030, or Target 7, reducing risks from pesticide pollution by half, and Target 16, reducing waste drastically. So I understand that countries only want to get going once the funding is there. But I do think because we're only talking and maybe fighting about who is going to pay for what, that we're kind of left the discussions about monitoring for these important other targets for later. And they're just as important in meeting the global biodiversity targets.
Is that not also about the money? So not meeting those targets, not spending anything on it. It's about...
Yeah, behind it, it's also about the money. But the conversations are now about raising more funds rather than tackling financial streams or economic interests that are already there. So maybe it's easier actually to talk about raising more money and how do we get private finance to do more rather than tackling, yeah, industries that are really harming the environment, but also really need to take steps. And my favorite target is probably target 18, and that's about repurposing harmful subsidies. And I didn't read any progress on that one in a report so far. So we were just really focusing on, do we create a new fund or not? And how much money is getting in there.
And is it also mostly agricultural subsidies that are in there?
Yeah, it's fossil fuel subsidies that are also counted towards that, and prefers subsidies to agriculture and the forestry sector, maybe fishing and agriculture sectors.
And are all countries at this meeting? Because I saw that even some countries like the Netherlands didn't even send a representative this year.
Well, we send representatives, but not political representatives.
Okay.
Representatives.
And how does that affect the commitment?
The commitment, I'm not sure, because we made a commitment in Montreal. It's more about following up to our pledges. And I think the Dutch government really shows that we're not taking it so seriously by not showing up. And also by not handing in a so-called NBSAP, a National Biodiversity Strategy and Action Plan, which is maybe for climate nerds, something similar like the National Determined Contribution, the NDC, under the Paris Agreement. But yeah, only 1/3 of countries submitted something, so we're not alone in that.
Yeah.
But still, I'm a bit embarrassed.
Maybe two questions about this. One is, why is it? Because the NDCs are produced by almost every country, and by these biodiversity plans, you see that, well, most countries don't care. It seems almost like that. And the second one, there's also a discussion on, and I thought that was positive, about genetic data and who's going to pay for it. So these are two separate questions.
So yeah, so I think, of course, climate change is quite a complex issue. But I do think countries see a bit more of a way forward because there's renewable energy technologies there. So there's new sectors that can probably replace maybe old, more polluting ones. And also, electric cars and other. Yeah, there's really a pathway forward in decarbonization. And I think countries are still really figuring out how do we tackle biodiversity loss, which is maybe even a more of a complex issue than climate change.
Yeah.
There's many more sectors that have effects on it. And also really basic ones, crucial ones like agriculture that every country has and every country is reliant on. And I think, countries are just fearful of tackling this.
Yeah.
This sector that is seen by many across countries as really key to their economy, but also to their cultures, for instance. So that's, I think, also why it's organized every 2 years, not every year. I think it's just not as much on the political agenda, which is a problem because we rely on nature for almost everything.
And I think biodiversity loss also, it materializes differently in different areas, different geographic areas. I saw that there's also a desertification agreement.
Yeah, that's the third Rio Convention. So in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, there were three global conventions on the environment held for the first time. And you have the CBD, the Convention on Biological Diversity, the UNFCCC on the Framework Convention on Climate Change, and the last one is the Convention to Combat Desertification. And that one has even less of a... less attention, I would say.
It seems very fragmented. I mean, wouldn't it be better if we could tackle some of these topics together, get a more holistic approach?
Yeah, there was also lots of discussions about this exactly actually at the COP. I think in the next couple of years, you will see more efforts to build synergies across the different COPs, maybe with meetings to kind of exchange information or what works and what doesn't work. But personally, I feel like biodiversity needs some separate attention now. So I think it's good that for now it's maybe organized separately. In the future, when we have a better understanding of biodiversity loss and also the funds there, we can maybe think about organizing combined environmental COPs. But I think all of these issues now deserve really separate attention.
But isn't it still about understanding it better? Is that the main issue?
Well, I've heard from people on the ground that there was lots of attention going to data, measurements, and really trying to understand on a project level, because biodiversity impacts are very localized, what the impacts are. So I do think for a lot of people, it's still about understanding it better. Mm-hmm. Also for financial institutions who are often invested across many types of industries, that they want kind of biodiversity data points about all of the different kinds of industries. And the more information we have, the better decisions we can make. But of course, as Triodos Bank, we believe that you can already make good decisions with the data that's out there. So don't invest in fossil fuels. Don't invest in pesticide producers, deep sea mining.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah. We know when we destroy nature, right?
Yeah.
It's not so difficult to see that. So, and of course, if we have better data, we understand better in what way we destroy biodiversity. But we can all already start somewhere, I would say.
Yeah. Maybe it's more that biodiversity loss is not maybe as linear as climate change, which also has feedback loops and also is not linear. Like ecosystem collapses really happen according to tipping points. Yeah. So it's really about understanding how far or close we are to these potential tipping points.
Yeah. And this is one of my favorite topics.
Yeah.
I was a bit afraid to mention the word tipping point here.
No, because it's so essential to, and this has to do with this COPs and this time we take for policymaking, because we appear to see that everything is kind of linear, right? So we don't see that nonlinear changes are happening, that we get into tipping points and we simply say, oh, we have time to do it. And so that always give me the nerves if we start talking about having better data, because I don't think we have the time for it. That's about tipping points.
And I guess biodiversity loss is also, it's a risk to companies and their supply chains, but it's also the negative impacts that companies have on biodiversity.
I want to say before we wrap up a couple of positive things,
okay,
because I've
perfect.
Just been, I think, complaining.
Yeah.
And I am really hopeful about what Hans just mentioned shortly, was that digital sequence information agreement. I must admit, I've never seen anything like it in any international environmental agreement. I did quite some classes on global environmental governance during my studies. And this one, countries have pledged that they will install taxes on the pharmaceutical industry, so on large companies that use digital sequence information from biodiverse places.
So you maybe have to explain what it is.
Yeah. So it's genetic information that can be used to build new medicines. I think I'm simplifying it over and over, but I've never seen a global agreement where countries have pledged that they set a tax on a certain level. So the agreement says that these pharmaceutical companies have to donate, or I guess being taxed, 1% of their profits or 0.1% of their revenue. I'm really curious to see how and if member states will apply it.
And where is this money being pledged to?
Yeah, to the Global Biodiversity Fund. They call it the CALI Fund, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's in the text, this is not an obligation yet. So there is a lot of room to not make it a tax. Mm. That might probably happen, but at least it's good news that it's recognized that companies who profit for free from public goods, that they have to pay for it.
Yeah, I think that's one really made me a bit more positive. And I also thought maybe later, maybe we can do something else for pesticide polluters or other industries that profit directly from nature. But we'll see.
So if I sum it up, not as much progress as we would have liked.
Nope.
It's taking a bit more time.
Taking a bit more time. They're doing an ad interim conference in Bangkok next year because they need more time for negotiations.
Okay.
And what's really good for that one is that I think it will be the first time that the new permanent voice of indigenous peoples will be represented.
Oh, interesting.
And that's also, I think the host country, Colombia, really pushed for that.
Yeah.
And those are the people that understand nature the best.
Yeah.
And I think can help guide the rest of the world in, doing some relationship therapy with our ecosystems. So.
Yeah, and definitely the social connection as well to the biodiversity loss, the communities that are affected there. Well, I can't say I am all that positively motivated, but hey, that's life, I guess. That's the state of the world. Hans, I'm really hoping that you've got some hopeful news for us this week.
Yeah, always. Let's start with the hopeful part of the news.
Okay.
Last week, there was the 2024 Climate Action Progress Report published by the European Commission, showing that net EU greenhouse gas emissions fell by 8.3% in 2023 compared to the year before.
Okay.
This is the largest annual drop in decades, with the exception of 2020 when we had COVID, etc. And the net greenhouse gas emissions are now 37% below 1990 levels, while GDP grew 68% over the same period, and showing the continued decoupling of emissions and economic growth. People who know me and hear me saying that will think, what is he saying? This is positive. And people who don't know me, I'm relatively skeptical about green growth. So can we decouple in an absolute sense carbon emissions from economic growth? Mm-hmm. And in this press release, because I was just citing the press release of the European Commission, it is stated that yes, we did it. This is very positive. I mean, maybe I have to reconsider my thoughts. So yes, decoupling is possible, it seems. And second one, investing in transitions is paying off, as well as price incentives, like we have seen in Europe, because one reason for this decline is, of course, high energy prices, and then people are becoming more energy efficient, etc. So this is the positive part.
Okay.
But we're not there. Because this decline was partly driven by temporary factors, like a warm winter we had in 23, like the high energy prices, so we saw more progress in that year. Mm-hmm. Also by an economy that was not growing that much. It was more or less stable, so 0.5%. Yeah. And even this absolute record is not a fast enough decoupling as we need to achieve the 2030 55% decrease in greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay. And what would be fast enough then?
What would be fast enough? Fast enough would be, yeah, I don't know by heart, but it's 134 million tons of carbon emissions we need for the next 6 years. And this is higher than we have seen over the last 6 years. So we need 8-9%. Annually in Europe. But that's not all the negative news. And then so about green growth, huh? So what is also missing here? So it's not going fast enough. It's also not, and that was another research paper that I read last week. They studied 1,500 regions to see if there was evidence of absolute decoupling. So a decline of carbon emissions and increase in growth. And their conclusion was in 30% of all cases, yes, it's possible, but it's 70% not.
Okay.
And not fast enough. So the good news is, yes, we can have more decoupling. Mm-hmm. The more nuanced is, news is not going fast enough. But maybe the negative news, and then I will want to link it back to Piotr, if you talk about green growth, the discussion always concentrates on the link between economic growth and carbon emissions.
Yeah.
But that's not the whole story. And maybe this is the story we can make happen as we see some evidence. Yeah. But the story on economic growth decoupling from negative impact on biodiversity and nature at large, that's not seen anywhere. Or on the relationship between economic growth and resource use, which has a large effect on biodiversity, land use, large effect on biodiversity loss, that's not happening. And that's why, so we started with, we talk about radical change, transformations, transitions. That's why in the end, if I look at those figures and try to be very optimistic, then I say, yeah, but we need more radical change. Mm-hmm. And it's also why I just said to Piotr, yeah, this is not going fast enough. Mm. And if you look, Piotr, to this from a biodiversity perspective, maybe I missed something about nature-based solutions or technical solutions that you're going to tell me now.
Yeah, if I'm listening to you, I'm more thinking, oh, maybe I was wrong about doing the COP separately. Maybe we should do it in an integrated way. But I'm also thinking about those renewable energy sectors that use lots of minerals and metals, yeah. Right? So maybe solar panels use different metals that will increase mining. And we see a lot of these mining problems in Indonesia and in the DRC. So sometimes also this sector has trade-offs with biodiversity loss as well. Yeah. So that really pleads for doing it more in an integrated way. And also maybe more with the global perspective, right? Because we're now only talking about Europe. If only Europe is becoming greener, I am worried that indeed these industries are moving to the Amazon and then start deforesting.
Yeah. that's true. So maybe the positive takeaway we can take from that is what you just said, that they should combine, like you also said, Emma, they should combine the COPs, more or less, to do an integrated way. But is there not any innovation that can help us here from nature?
Yeah, you mean, of course, the nature-based solutions that are supposed to have double benefits. Yes. This is really, of course, also an important sector for Tweedles. And we see more and more examples of clients and investees who are building on solutions like reforestation, like regenerative organic agriculture, also recently in seaweeds, in combinations that help both biodiversity and the climate and also local economies. So,
but that's only limited to, you know, a few sectors or industries. I think underpinning all of this is we're using too many resources and we're now taking them from places where they can't be regenerated. We're hitting a tipping point where, you know, certain species are already dying out. So I think underneath it all, what we mentioned and what Hans also mentioned in the beginning was, yeah, the mindset change. We can't keep consuming at the rate that we're doing in Europe or in Western countries then. But at the same time, you also need the global south. Don't they get a chance to also further develop? What about their social conditions?
That's one of the biggest discussions, Emma.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to do them in this podcast, but nope. I think in the coming episode, we will definitely come back to it.
And 2 weeks is the climate COP. So then maybe you have an option to discuss there how biodiversity should be integrated in the climate COP.
There you go. All right. Already got some ideas for the next episode. That was it for the very first episode of Money for Change podcast. I want to thank you, Piotr, for joining us to give us more insight into COP16, the challenges, but also some positive, hopeful solutions.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, great. All right. And Hans, we'll see you next week, hopefully
yes.
With a bit more positive.
I started positive.
That's true. All right. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for next week's episode. This was Money for Change.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.